So it's not necessarily to negate that serpent seed, because I think that's very interesting that the author of Genesis could have definitely been pointing, like, because I don't think it was a doubt that he was definitely pointing out the seed that would come down. Because I don't think it's one or the other. I think it's both and. Like, I think it can be both of these ideas that the author of Genesis was actually trying to bring home.
Welcome to the Pondercast, where we think deeply about the Bible and theology. Let's get pondering. Hello and welcome back to the Pondercast. It's great that you've once again tuned in to this wonderful program where we talk about theology and the Bible, sometimes philosophy and other
sometimes
things.
Ethics sometimes.
Yep, absolutely. So, welcome here. How are you this fine day, Drew?
I'm doing good. On the other one episode, also we start off with this. I'm feeling a little under the weather, but hopefully we can make it through this podcast. Hopefully I'm not too disturbing for our listeners to listen to. But hopefully it'll come out okay. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yep.
Hopefully the voice doesn't get more raspier and raspier as we go on. But yes, welcome back to the Pondercast. Mm-hmm. This is your one-stop shop for everything. We have theology. We have ethics. Philosophy. I always try to, you know.
We'll be talking about abortion sometime.
Yes, we're in the middle of reading a book on it. Who's that book by the way?
Charles Bellanger.
Yeah, I didn't even try to pronounce
it. I think that's how you say his name. I'm guessing. I don't know. Maybe it's like Bellinger or something.
And before you all discount it, just a little preview for it. I'm about 150 pages in, maybe 100 pages in, and all he's talked about is violence.
Yeah.
Hasn't even touched abortion yet, which is really interesting. He takes from a very good perspective, a very interesting perspective on the talk. This book, okay, so this book was written before Roe versus V. Wade was switched, like before
was overturned. Was
overturned, right?
Yeah, it was written in like 2015, 2016. Yeah.
It's just it's kind of been not rejuvenized, but kind of brought out again because of that situation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of brought to light again. But it's a very interesting read thus far.
Yeah, it's a totally unpredictable book. It was definitely not what I was expecting, and I'm glad. I was kind of thinking it wouldn't be, and it was really refreshing. And I think it addresses a lot of our societal issues as well, more than just abortion. So I think that's a book where we could have probably, I'm hoping that we'll talk about it, the two of us, and I'd really love to try and get the author on and talk about it with him as well.
Yeah, I just really appreciate his aspect because he's not just another Ben Shapiro video rattling off the reasons why, you know what I mean? Like the stereotypical
exactly.
concept, this is when life begins, this is when life ends, this is what life is, you know, it doesn't
well really what Ben Shapiro and them, they it's all part of this big culture war game and
you know what I'm saying though, you have the staples of what the argument is for and against. I think this book kind of reaches out past those staple arguments,
exactly,
way more to like a sociological, way more to a societal kind of issue, which is really interesting. I'm really looking forward to the reading the rest of the book. I haven't read it all and I'm interested in it. Can't wait for the episode.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to talk about something totally unrelated, and that is, I'm not sure if this is the best way to describe it, but the brother's motif in Genesis, and I use that word motif lightly because the word motif indicates similar patterns, similar themes, similar narratival characteristics, and I'm not sure if that's necessarily the case. The only thing that I think is similar right now, what I think is similar is that there's brothers. And this, I don't know why I thought of this idea, but I did. Must have been reading something or thinking, listening to something, and thought about the fact that what drives the narrative in Genesis a lot of the time are brothers. Sons and brothers, because we see the effects of the fall through brothers, the Abrahamic promise, and the kind of the dysfunction of all that, brothers, Jacob and Esau, and then the 12 brothers. So, I mean, and Noah's sons, three brothers. So it's not always like two. And I was also thinking, can we include Abraham and Lot in this? And I thought, well, maybe not. I'm not sure about that. What do we include? I was trying to look for some literature on this, but couldn't really find anything. Probably have to do a bit of digging to find out what scholars, if scholars are thinking about this. Yeah. I think there's a reason that we're supposed to see these brothers. And I think it starts at Genesis 3:15, where the serpent has deceived Eve. Eve and Adam have eaten the fruit. They've sinned. They're cursed. And God says, I will put enmity between you and the woman, you being the serpent, and between your offspring, the serpent's offspring, and the woman's offspring. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. Actually, it should be between your seed. I'm reading from the ESV. They translate seed as offspring, but seed indicates the singular. So that was something I was wondering, if that's what we should be thinking about when we read the brothers in Genesis, is that they are part of this, if you want to call it, well, it's called the Proto-Evangelion. So it's a big fancy word. Evangelion is gospel. So the proto-gospel, the New Testament gospel. So what do you think of that initial conclusion? That's an oxymoron. But what do you think of that?
Initial hypothesis?
Yeah.
Well, I think there is a motif found in these brothers, because their stories have so many similarities.
Okay.
And they might not be as detailed as similarities, but they all have the same kind of narrative to each one of their stories. And ultimately, I think you're right on the fact that they do point us to what do you say, egal, or what was the big word you said? Egalitarian or something?
No. Do not. We're not getting into that discussion.
No. I said you or something. What did you say? What's the word?
Proto-Evangelion.
That one, yeah. I think there is a gospel emphasis on these brotherly motifs, on these brotherly relationships. Do you mind if I list a couple of these brothers, just so we can get an idea who we're talking about, different situations we can kind of get into a little bit? Is that okay?
Well, I'll just mention one thing.
Okay.
that I think that we're maybe supposed to see this prophecy, what would you say, declaration? We're supposed to see this declaration throughout in these brothers, is this the serpent's seed and the woman's seed. And I wonder if as we're going throughout, that one is the woman's seed, and that one is the serpent's seed. Are we supposed to see that? And that was something I was thinking about, and I thought, I don't think it's that clear cut though. Or we see transformation. And I'm going to get ahead of myself if I don't stop. So,
that's interesting. I feel like you and list. I think you and I took two very different takes on this whole thing, but it was just fine because we both studied it separately. Both kind of came with two different conclusions. Yeah. Anyways, let's look at the list of some of these highlighted ones, and you can add if you want or subtract if you want. But we have Cain and Abel, kind of right after Adam and Eve there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just say the lesser name is always the one that in your kind of philosophy or thinking would be the serpent seed, and the second name will be the woman seed. Okay. So Cain and Abel, right? Cain was serpent, Abel. Interesting enough, the first name I name is also going to be the older. The second name is always going to be the younger. So remember that as well. Cain, yeah, and Abel, Ishmael and Isaac, Jacob and Esau, Jacob's sons and Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim. There's an interesting story in Genesis where Jacob knowingly gives the blessing to Manasseh instead of, or to Ephraim instead of Manasseh. Anyways, Aaron and Moses. There's a little bit with it. Aaron and Moses.
In Genesis.
I'm not going past. I'm going past Genesis. We didn't say just in Genesis, did we?
Yeah.
No, no, we didn't say that. You didn't specify that.
Yeah, I did. I said the brothers' motif in Genesis.
No, I went further. Anyways, this motif runs throughout the Bible. It's not just Genesis. That's what
well,
is important. So we don't have to touch on these ones, but just to give more examples. Eliab and David. Eliab's one of the brothers. Like, no, I'm not going to fight Goliath. David, the younger, goes and fights.
Absalom
and Solomon. Absalom, you know, he just asked for power. Solomon asked for wisdom. You have that this bind. And ultimately, it culminates in Jesus being, or Adam being the older brother to Jesus, in a sense. And we look at Luke's genealogy.
Right.
Kind of that out right. And then Paul even alludes to it in the New Testament. Jews are kind of like the older brother to the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. So the Gentiles were the first to receive the gospel, or not the first, but they received the gospel when the Jews were kind of hesitant. Anyways, sorry, I went past the Genesis kind of motif, but well, that's because I kept studying. I kept being like, oh, it's not just Genesis. This motif kind of runs throughout the Bible.
Oh, yeah. Like absolutely.
But we don't have to get into all of them.
You could say Elijah and Elisha. You know, you could go there too. But as an aside, the reason that I was thinking of Genesis is that one thing that this is a tip for Bible reading. This is, I think, really a good discipline, is to just let each individual book of the Bible speak for themselves. So this is what I wanted to do with this. There's the temptation to read Romans into this. You already hinted at that. You kind of touched on that this interplay between Jew and Gentile, where Paul kind of talks about that. But, you know, I want to see what was the author of Genesis doing. It's not, I don't believe that this is just a random collection of narratives for the sake of showing the creation of the world and Israel's history. There's a reason that the brothers, they're driving the narrative, and some of the themes come back at the end of the book. Mm-hmm. To show us what's going on here. And then we can see the big picture of what it's pointing toward, just as you've said.
Right.
So did you include Noah's sons in there? Because I thought that they were part of this motif in Genesis, but I wasn't sure because there's three of them. And I mean, that's kind of the same with, there's Cain and Abel and Seth. Is that three? You know, I don't know. I don't know if we want to go with the two, because that's what I'm wondering.
I went with the two because I think the argument, the conflict kind of arises always within two, primarily. Jacob's sons and Joseph aside. But it's kind of always one group pitted against the other one, rather than three kind of makes kind of a weird dilemma. So I just kept to the two, but we could add them in there if you want.
Well, to make an argument here, a very implausible argument, could Shem and Jephthah be acting as one character in a sense, as the good as the good guy versus the evil, and therefore there's, in a sense, I think that's a little stretching the data.
I
mean, but
you could, I guess, but
I think I think there's something interesting there. Because let's start with Cain and Abel then.
Okay, so do you want the story? You mean Cain brings a sacrifice, messes it up basically, a wrongful sacrifice. God doesn't accept it. God accepts Abel's sacrifice. Cain kills Abel. Cole's nuts, right? That's essentially the story, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Abel is accepted. And then Cain is jealous. And what does it say here? Sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. So definitely echoing back to the Adam and Eve story there, that you're letting sin take over you. And he does. He submits to it, and kills Abel. So, I mean, is that, do you think that that is setting the pattern for the brothers?
I think it sets a pattern. I think there's another pattern being set, but I think so. Like, so Jacob and Esau. Let's just move on. I want to see this pattern kind of play out, in the or does it not play out quite as much in the rest? But rather, Cain and Abel sets it up. Is that what you're saying? It's like Jacob and Esau, right? Esau basically sells his birthright for a bowl of soup, and that's basically where their rivalry begins, right? That's where their argument kind of. He sells his birthright to his younger brother, right? And so, are you saying that's also hinting to that seed? Is that what you're saying, or it's hinting to that evil, the serpent? Brother is the one that's kind of disobeying his birthright, not following the trend, or is that what you say then?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if this is a pattern that we should notice throughout Genesis, that there's the older and the younger brother, and the older brother is the one that seemingly is playing the role of the seed of the serpent, and the one isn't. I don't know if I want to go there, because it's pretty, like, it's more complicated than that. Like, think about Jacob. He is the epitome of the serpent seed, because he's deceitful. He's incredibly deceitful. And Esau fall and Esau falls for it. And and he tricks Isaac. He tricks his father into giving the blessing. So we see that the older brother is tricked by his brother. It's not that there's this third party sin, where we see in Adam and Eve, serpent, we see in Cain and Abel. There's this third party coming in. Jacob is like the embodiment of the serpent.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, so maybe we can look at it from a different point of view. This is kind of where the aspect that I was taking from, I think it kind of highlights different things. What if it's based on responsibility, not necessarily the serpent and seed? So hear me out. So in all these stories, the older brother has a responsibility, right? This isn't my idea. I definitely got this from an article I was reading, so I don't want people to think I'm wise or anything. But so in this article, they're saying the older brother is given responsibility, right? Jacob or Cain was supposed to give a sacrifice. Esau was supposed to have the birthright. You know, Jacob's older sons were supposed to take care of Joseph. They're all given this responsibility. And ultimately, the older brother in all these stories fails. They do. They either sell their birthright. They either, you know, make a bad sacrifice. They don't take care of their brother. They sell their brother into slavery. The older brother always fails at what he's supposed to do. He doesn't do it right. He does it wrong. But the younger brother steps up and accomplishes the goal for the older brother. And if you just think about all these stories in your head, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that kind of happens in all of them. And the younger brother actually ends up sacrificing more than the older brothers. It's kind of bring apart to bring forth the blessing that he receives. And so if you play out each of these stories to the furthest end, the younger brother does die. It's like, right? Abel literally dies because his brother was so envious and jealous and mad at him. But he still completed the task, the responsibility of Cain by bringing forth a proper sacrifice to God. Likewise, Joseph, right? He actually gets sold to slavery. He dies in a sense. He sacrifices so much, but also he reaps the blessing when he comes high in Pharaoh's house. In that sense, it kind of, that's why I say maybe it is a motif that all these kind of follow that train of thought. That it's always this kind of secular circle pattern. Cyclical. Is that the right word? Cyclical?
Yeah.
It's a cyclical pattern of the older brother always doing it wrong, the younger brother always coming forth and kind of not necessarily solving the problem, but bringing resolution to the responsibility that was needed. But then ultimately the younger brother has to give up something or sacrifice or die, or something bad happens to them because of it in order that they may reap the blessing that comes from that responsibility. So that was kind of the framework that I kind of read into the brothers, but just got one or two articles I was reading. So it's not necessarily to negate that serpent seed, because I think that's very interesting that the author of Genesis could have definitely been pointing, like, because I don't think it was a doubt that he was definitely pointing out the seed that would come down. Cause I don't think it's one or the other. I think it's both. And like, I think it can be both of these ideas that the author of Genesis was actually trying to bring home to.
Well, and then the major theme of the offspring to Abraham, who would be a blessing to all nations. So I think in that, we're also supposed to see that that is a further fulfillment or an expansion of that promise in Genesis 3, this offspring. And so then with those two brothers, Isaac and Ishmael, that pattern that you're talking about, I don't know if that comes through. It, in a sense, it does, in that Ishmael is the older brother and Isaac is the younger, and Isaac receives the blessing. Isaac is the promised son, and Ishmael doesn't do anything wrong.
Right.
He's That's blessed. True. He is, he finds favor with God. And I mean, there's that interesting bit there of,
Very interesting bit.
Yeah. Like they're vulnerable. They're in the desert and God has pity on them. I wonder if that points toward Israel in the desert and God having pity on them.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of foreshadowing and a lot of, I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm placing my own thoughts into it, because there's part of me that's like, it's such a Western attitude of, were they actually thinking this? Were they actually this smart to do that, to write that?
Yeah.
But I think that we don't see it. And also this, how do I want to put it? Oh, how do I explain it? Kind of changing the roles. Yeah, you've talked about that, but also kind of showing it's reversal. There's reversal. There's paradox. Yeah. There's signs. There's foreshadowing. Cause you see with Joseph, he has these dreams, these visions that people will, like his brothers will bow down to him, and they do. And there's almost like this force, like he's almost like a messianic figure in that way. And yet he isn't the patriarch of the Messiah. It's his brother Judah. And yet Judah is a dastardly figure. But receives the blessing. So it's very interesting. Yeah, so we get that blessing, that kind of that foreshadowing, that promise to Judah from Jacob, that from you will come a kingly figure. This foreshadowing.
Yeah, which undercuts the whole Manasseh Ephraim kind of blessing in the same chapter, I think it's 48 or something like that, or 47. Because that one I thought was interesting, because it's kind of just like a one-off. It's like, oh yeah. And Joseph tries to say, no, Israel, Jacob, you're doing it wrong. You have the wrong side. He's like, no. I'm doing it right. This one's getting blessed. This one's getting this blessed or lesser, which is very weird. And then yet the highlights on Judah, who's where the messianic line, which is it's weird. It's very strange. I didn't look far enough into that. I don't think. But
the really neat thing about Joseph is that he is definitely a fulfillment of the promised Abraham of being a blessing to the nations. Why? Because he's taken, well, first of all, there's foreshadowing there, Israel taken into captivity. They're not really in cap, like, we're getting there. But he's taken into Egypt, and he solves the famine problem. He brings great prosperity to Egypt. That is definitely a fulfillment of blessing to the nations, to a nation,
yeah,
to other people, non-Egyptians. Like Jacob comes, there's obviously other, what would you call, Hebrews, yeah, coming to reap the prosperity of Egypt. So, I mean, that's a really cool fulfillment. But it's also, I think, to show that this person is pointing toward, but he's not the ancestor of, in that direct way like Judah is. And so we're really seeing that what God has planned is not according to human plans. I think that's what, right, we're seeing through these brothers.
Right. But yeah, well, that's the point of the motif, though, is to bring out the yeah, they're not the line of, or necessarily the lineage of Jesus, but they still point to him,
mm-hmm,
in their stories, in the blessings, in the, even the way that they have to, like, the younger brother has to, you know, go through trial and tribulation most of the times to get to that blessing, right? Like, he was sold into slavery and ultimately had to work his way up to get to that. Even that points to Christ, to receive the blessing, what had to get paid to receive it. And so I think that's why I think it is a motif, and you kind of hesitate whether it is or isn't, but I think it definitely is, because it's a theme that is ultimately pointing to the gospel, or pointing to a type of Christ in each story. Mm-hmm. It's definitely reflecting that. Like you said, whether or not it was actually in the direct line of Jesus, but.
Well, finish.
No, I was finished. I was going to.
I also think what we see with the brothers is that whole bit about the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman isn't as clear cut as I would like it to be, because I think we see that the seed of the woman is the seed of the serpent.
Mm.
And so we don't get a clear answer to that until the Gospels. I think we can keep asking that question, because the history of Israel, I think, is kind of getting at this, you know, where's God? Where is his promise being fulfilled? I think it's in the back of the mind, because it really didn't come to fruition for so long. And what is that even, you know, in an Old Testament, this would be an interesting thing to look into. What is an Old Testament conception of the serpent seed, and what does it mean for the woman's seed to crush his head? But anyways, that's a totally different thing. What I want to get at is that, you know, with Isaac, I was just briefly looking that up, you know, because I was thinking, okay, isn't there, you know, how does the motif play out there? Because it's Ishmael was actually the good son. Isaac was kind of dastardly, because he lied. He lied about, he followed in the sins of Abraham by being deceitful about Rebecca, didn't he? With Abimelech? So there, I think we see that even Isaac has some serpent blood in him. And so it's not clear cut. And I think that's the point, that each person, that God is working through each person, but there's like this, I mean, okay, I'm going to bring in some New Testament thinking here. There's always that battle. There's the battle between the old man and the new man. And is that taking place in Genesis? I'm not sure.
I think so. I think it's pointing to the old man, new man. Like I said, I think it culminates in the Adam being the old man and Jesus being the new Adam. I think it's too paralleled to not make that jump of the old man, new man, and whether you want to call Adam the older brother, quote unquote, to Jesus the younger brother, we don't. I mean, the Bible doesn't say that necessarily, so I don't want to say that parallel, but it almost acts like that in a sense. But then your seed thing actually pans out in the aspect of, in that kind of regard, I guess. But that there is that parallel of the old Adam and the new Adam, old man, new man, serpent seed, woman seed. Mm-hmm. So I think there is an aspect of that we can draw from it. Not necessarily, mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't mean this woman seed is going to be perfect or the right person always. Right? Like, it just because, you know, Isaac was not as good as Ishmael, I guess you could say, to make it bluntly, doesn't necessarily mean he wasn't the seed, right? So, I don't know. Just a thought.
I think we see with Jacob, this is something we talked about last year with Jeremy Lawsett, talking about Jacob wrestling with God. And that was I think that's a beautiful moment, a kind of a turning point in the narrative, where we see this deceitful person wrestling with God, and his life kind of changes. And he almost becomes, well, he becomes Israel. He becomes a new person, mm-hmm. a new identity. And that is really fascinating. Like, there is the beginning of Israel's, of the nation's story, of this man who had serpent's blood, but he wrestled with God, and his life radically shifted from there. And I think that we're seeing there what it looks like for God to have the victory over the serpent seed.
Yeah, I think.
Well, but that's not thought out. That's just off the top of my head. So
well, I think
I'm willing to change my mind.
Well, that's good. Everyone should always be willing to change their mind. But I think you're onto something there. I guess that's what I was getting at. Just because I think that seed aspect is crucial to the brother motif. And that's what I was saying before. Just because the brother isn't perfect doesn't mean they're still not the seed of the woman. The other one's the seed of the serpent. I think there still is that mm-hmm. aspect of differentiating the seeds and which seed belongs to who. I think that is a good way thing to point out for sure. Mm-hmm. I think it makes sense. I think you're standing on some rock, not just sand, you know?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. What else you got, Perry? You have anything else you want to continue or close us off with?
That's all I have to say on the brother's motifs.
Yeah, I think
Genesis. This,
I really actually enjoyed looking this up, kind of studying it. I thought it was very interesting to kind of see
different. Yeah, this is fun to think about. Yeah.
Well, just I like that we both came to different kind of points to come through in this, because it was kind of, we didn't really talk about it too much. So I was just talking about the brother's motifs, see what we find. And we kind of had a twofold kind of answer to it, which I really like, actually. I think in Genesis, I think there's maybe a twofold answer to this brotherly motif. Mm. But anyways, we can digress from there.
It's something I want to see what... You said that you read an article on this? So yeah, there's stuff written on it.
Yeah, like it was pretty tough to find, actually. It's pretty hard to...
Okay.
Who was it written by? Sorry, I just scrolled to the top of the article. Yeah, just a random guy.
Like this is a journal article or?
Yeah, it's like a, it's just on like a journal or something like that. Yeah.
And it's what's not the like journal?
It's not like super well documented. You know what I mean? Like it's not like a, I'm trying to think of the word, high profile thing. It's just kind of it's just kind of an article written by a guy who they posted on their website. But anyways, I just sent it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on older brothers, younger brothers in the Bible. It's Max Graham. Max Graham is who the author is. People can check it out. It's an interesting read. Some of the stuff I don't really agree with in it, but anyways, we can close this episode off. But
yes. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in once again. I'm glad that you joined us. This is a really fun episode. Yeah. It's always fun to dig into the Bible. I just love when we can really dig into the Bible. So, what do we got for you? Rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us a like on Facebook. Let us know what you think. Mm-hmm. We'd like to hear what you've been thinking about with this topic in our previous topics. And stay tuned for that episode on abortion. And until next week,
keep pondering.